So we're going to jump into Matthew chapter 20. The parable this morning is a famous workers in the vineyard parable. You may not know it by name, but when we read it, you'll go, oh yeah, I know this one. So would you guys stand with me as we read this together? For the kingdom of heaven is like a landowner who went out early in the morning to hire workers for his vineyard. He agreed to pay them a denarius for the day and sent them into his vineyard. About 9 in the morning, he went out and saw others standing in the marketplace doing nothing. He told them, "You also go and work in my vineyard, and I will pay you whatever is right." So they went out. He went out again about noon and about 3 in the afternoon and did the same thing. About 5 in the afternoon, he went out and found still others standing around. He asked them, "Why have you been standing here all day long doing nothing?" "Because no one has hired us," they answered. He said to them, "You also go and work in my vineyard." When evening came, the owner of the vineyard said to his foreman, "Call the workers and pay them their wages, beginning with the last ones hired and going on to the first." The workers who were hired about 5 in the afternoon came and each received a denarius. So when those who came were hired first, they expected to receive more. But each one of them also received a denarius. When they received it, they began to grumble against the landowner. "These who were hired last worked only 1 hour," they said, "and you have made them equal to us who have borne the burden of the work and the heat all day." But he answered one of them, "I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired the last the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do with my own money? Or are you envious because I'm generous?" So the last will be first, and the first will be last. This is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. You can take a seat. I'm going to sit if you don't mind. I'm still somewhat recovering from the cold. So if you've had it, you know, and if you don't, I pray you don't get it. But my sinuses are still a little off. I'm feeling 90%, which is great, but you just can't seem to stop the drainage. It's an interesting parable. Just kind of summarizing this story to give you a little bit of idea how this may have unfolded. So imagine we're... you're working, you own this vineyard, right? And you've had a great harvest, and you need to get the grapes collected before maybe an incoming storm, right? You got a big storm coming in, and you're like, all right, I've got to get this done today, so I'm just going to go into town, I'm going to get as many workers as I can, and we're going to get the grapes. And everybody's already got a job, so you're like, all right, I'm just going to give you a solid day's wage here, maybe in our case, $200, all right? Can you come work for me for $200 today? It's like, all right, yeah, that sounds good to me. So he brings his crew in, and they're doing the work, and you notice that there's still not enough workers. And the storm, you're watching the storm come in, and you're like, we got to get this thing harvested today. So you go back into town, and you get more workers. You're like, I've already offered a day's wage, so why don't you guys just come on? I got to get this thing done. There's so many grapes. There's enough money for everybody. Just come on. And you just keep collecting people. And then as all the grapes are collected and you got these buckets and buckets and it's like the storm is coming. It's going to be here in like an hour. And you're desperate. You got to get all this stuff inside. So you go back into town, and there's nobody's working at this point. So you go to the bar, and you're like, All right, guys, anyone interested in helping? I got to get all these grapes inside. And, you know, they're drinking their Bud Light and going, oh, what's it worth? And you're like, I don't know, it's an hour's worth of work. What's that worth to you? And they're like, well, I don't know. Nobody's asked me to work all day. It's like, fine, I'll give you a full day's wage. I really need your help. It's like, okay. So you get all these people and finally get the grapes in. And at the end of the day, you finish the harvest. And you're like, all right, so we're going to pay everybody what I've decided we're going to pay them. So that's kind of how this story could unfold, right? It's an interesting story because we all see in a normal everyday life that you don't usually get paid a full day's wage for 1 hour's worth of work. That would be amazing. I'll work an hour and get paid for a full day, right? But there's also a little bit of kind of like some injustice here. Like, I've worked a full day, and why are they getting the same amount that I worked? And obviously, this is it's a parable about the grace of God, right? I mean, at face value, clearly this is Christ has offered the same grace to everybody. And what a beautiful way to tell this story. Is that no matter at what point in your life, no matter what time it is, however your soul is, when you come into the kingdom, that's the moment. And that's okay. It gives credence to those end-of-life salvation stories that we hear about, the people on their deathbed giving their life to Jesus. And it's like, yes, like there's merit there. There's a warrant for their salvation. Jesus makes it clear here. No matter what point in your life you come to me, you get the full amount of salvation. What a lovely story, right? I mean, my father-in-law, he was baptized in 2019 after, I think he was 62. He died at 66 or 67. He was baptized in 2019, right? After years of anger against the church. His mom was divorced, I think, two or three times, and she had boyfriends. And he, as a kid, traveled from state to state, really insecure childhood life. He was mad at God. But ultimately, near the end of his life, he gave his life to the Lord. What a beautiful story. The Lord accepts you, no matter where you've been, right? You could be some crummy drunkard in a bar, but the Lord's invited you and you go, yes, I'll come. What a beautiful story. It's I know Guy at, I think it was December 28th sermon after Christmas, shared Alistair Begg, a famous Scottish preacher, tells this story of how the man in the middle cross, or how the thief of one of the three crosses, you know, Jesus invites him into heaven, right? And he gets to heaven, and the angel's there at the gate. How did you get here? He's like, I don't know. And they're like checking on his like doctrine. He's like, do you believe in the authority of Scripture? And the guy's like, I mean, what are you talking about? What is that? He's like, well, what about, the doctrine of salvation? I mean, can you state that? Like, how did you get saved? The guy's like, I don't know what you're asking of me. And the angel's like, all right, let me go check with my boss. So he goes back and brings one of the higher angels, and they're looking through the paper, and they're like, we're trying to figure out how we get you in here. We see that you're here, but how did you get here? And the guy goes, the man in the middle cross said I could come. And what a just a remarkable way of framing that at no point in your life is it ever too late. You don't have to have stuff right. Doesn't have to be perfect. But I tell you what, there is one who has invited you, and he said you could come. So, if that's all this parable is, then you got your money's worth today and you can go home. But as I've studied this over the last couple of weeks, I've been off for 2 Sundays, so I've been sitting in this. I've been sitting in this parable for a couple of weeks, and it started to get pretty uncomfortable for me. I noticed something unsettling, that the story does not end with generosity. It doesn't end with Jesus' grace. It ends with a question: are you envious because I'm generous? Are you envious because I'm generous? And that was really uncomfortable for me. And I think we have to look at that question, because I think if we're honest with ourselves, we tend to see us, me, as the hero or the good guy, the one on the right side. You know, we're the broken and the lost and the ones that Jesus is going after. But we're never the bad guy in the story, are we? And if you think you're always the good guy in the story, I think you're in a dangerous place when you read the scripture. As if you've made it, as if there's nothing else you can learn from the scriptures. As if there's no more discipleship for you to grow in. Are you envious because Christ is generous? Question doesn't challenge your laziness, it challenges your entitlement. You've worked hard, and you deserve. This is where the bookkeeping tendency comes into play, right? I mean, we're so quick to do the math in life and keep track of who deserves what, how much have I invested, and what my return on the investment should be. We're pretty good at the math. We think about the people who were paid first and the ones who were paid last, and in this story, the math doesn't quite add up, does it? What caught me about this story is realizing that it's not about the money. The lesson Jesus is teaching is about our perception of our position with him. Are you envious because I'm generous? So the actual Greek there, if you translated this literally, would say, is your eye evil because I'm good? Now, the work of translation is difficult because it has to be readable, right? Like, we have to understand what's being done here. And this is the NIV translation. Are you envious because I'm generous? But the way Jesus phrases this, is your eye evil because I'm good? Jesus is suggesting that our bookkeeping, our perception, isn't just a personality trait. It's not just the way that you're seeing the world. There's an impairment. He's like calling out this block in your eye. He calls that evil. You can't see the beauty of what he's trying to do because you're too busy doing the math and calculating the equity of the story. Why he ends, the first will be last, and the last will be first. So he's taking the math and he's flipping it upside down and saying, don't you see what I'm trying to say? The first is the employees, the ones who worked hard all day, those who grew up in the church, those who pay their tithe, those who stand up and worship, and sometimes you even raise your hand. Maybe you lead a study. Maybe you're on a team lead here. You have worked hard. I've served my time, and I deserve the outcomes that I've invested in. And the last, of course, are those who have received a great reward and done very little. Those who walk in the back on Sunday mornings, sit in the back, and leave before anybody notices them. They don't want to talk to anybody. But in their heart of hearts, they know the Spirit's called them. The people who work all day, don't have time to come to Bible studies, but sit quietly at night and pray. Just ask the Lord to be present with them. We say they don't deserve the same gifts that I've been given. This is a hard passage. Because if we insist on being first, God will give you exactly what the contract offers. If you demand to Christ that you should get more, he's going to give you what he offered you and no more, and he's going to send you away. Are we employees, or are we the recipients of the generosity and grace of Christ? Gosh, we work hard, right? And we do this in our own worlds. Where do I stand? Do I fit in? Have I made it? Am I important to the story as it's unfolding in front of me? Let's broaden this out, because something is happening here in this story that chapter 19 and the end of chapter 20 kind of bookend what Jesus is telling us in this. Immediately before this, Matthew tells this story. Peter shouts out, "Who can be saved?" after Jesus tells the rich young ruler that he should sell everything. As if the doing the law and doing everything right is not enough, Jesus says, "Get rid of all of it, because it's ruling you, and follow me." And Peter's like, "Jesus, that doesn't make any sense. If that's the call, then who can be saved at all?" And Jesus does this. He goes, "Tell you what, the first will be last, and the last will be first." And then Matthew so eloquently folds this story in. And then at the end of this story, this is amazing, you guys. James and John's mom steps in after Jesus tells this story. And I can imagine those two, they're like, "Mom, stop." And she goes, "Jesus, my two boys, they're great, yeah? They've been following you the whole time. When you're ruling in your kingdom, they're going to be at the left and right hand of you, right?" Like, "Oh, Mom, stop." Jesus is like, "You have no idea what you're asking. This ruling is going to cost everything. Everything. If you want to follow me, it's going to cost you everything." And then the other disciples get all bent out of shape about it. They read this, Matthew 20, 24 through 28. When the ten heard about this, they were indignant with the two brothers. Jesus called them together and said, "You know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them, and their high officials exercise authority over them. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you, if you want to sit with me, you must be a servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life a ransom for many." Romans 6:26, is that right? 6:23. What's Romans 6:23? You guys remember that one? "For the wages of sin is death. But how does it end? Christ gave his life as ransom for the many." Grace doesn't just level the pay. It levels our rank. It places us on equal footing. The ground at the cross is level. There's no hierarchy in the kingdom. In fact, if we're gonna try to pursue greatness, then we must come to serve and become a slave for one another, to out-serve one another, to be the mostest humblest. Jesus, in this second side, reverses that accounting model of the gospel, where most often we say the one with the most wins, to the victor goes the spoils, history's written by the winners. The grace of Jesus flips this script. It doesn't ask anything from you, and it doesn't need you for it to be effective. I love this. Verse 14, Jesus says, "I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I gave you." If he didn't express his heart any more clearly, I wanted to give them the same. Does that not reveal the evil in your eyes? That I'm so generous? Romans 11, Paul kind of goes after this. If you're familiar with Romans, Paul is really trying to diagnose the conflict between the Jews and the Greeks, Gentiles. He says this, and starting in verse 13, "I'm talking to you Gentiles. And as much as I am the apostle to the Gentiles, I take pride in my ministry in the hope that I may somehow arouse my own people to envy and save some of them." Paul was Jewish. "For the rejection, the Jews, brought reconciliation to the world. What will their acceptance be but life from the dead? If part of the dough offered as first fruits is holy, then the whole batch is holy. If the root is holy, so are the branches. Some of the branches have been broken off." He's talking about the Jews who have rejected Christ. "And you, though a wild olive shoot," you, unless any of you are Jewish, "have been grafted in among the others and now share in the nourishing sap from the olive root. Do not consider yourself to be superior to those other branches." Gentiles. "If you do, consider this." So, if your eye is evil, consider this. "You do not support the root, but the root supports you. You will say then, 'Branches were broken off so that I could be grafted in.' Yes, granted. But they were broken off because of unbelief. You stand by faith. Don't be arrogant, but tremble. For if God did not spare the natural branches, he won't spare you either. So if you don't accept the entire message of the gospel, that grace is free and it has come to you and you can receive it freely by faith, if you cannot accept the entire package as it is, you are no more safe than they are, and he will cut you off. There is one gift, and that gift is called grace. And he has offered it freely because he wanted to. He wants everybody to have it. So who's better? Who's better than who here? Raise your hand. You got you. Who's better than who? Of course you're not going to raise your hand. That would be embarrassing. But we do this, you guys. I do this all the time. I love to feel better than my neighbor. I love it when I look at somebody. You know, we watch these videos of people like tripping over things, and it is so funny when people like slip on ice, and it's like, yes, that's so good. I would never slip on ice. It feels so good to place yourself above somebody else. It like justifies where you are and that you've done things right. But that's where this parable really starts to hit the hardest, you guys. This is why it's been so uncomfortable for me. Because this is where our greed, our comparison, our pride start to show. The ugly, ugly faces of the greedy things that are going on inside our hearts. Where Jesus takes on those sins of lust and gossip and pride and covetousness. How much is enough? How much is enough? Have you asked that? How much do you need? Gosh, we compare ourselves so much. We're always thinking about what other people have. Always. I want more. Look at what they got. And for those of us who have gotten a lot, we get really caught up in the spiritual pride. We're like, we've been working all day. It's that second look, though. I mean, friends, when we talk about lust, it's that selfish question, how can I use this for my pleasure, right? It's a lust for status, a lust for things. I have a friend who always jokes when the newest TV comes out, he's like, I'm lusting after TVs right now. And they make some pretty nice big TVs, too. When we start to compare, we stop looking at the landowner. We start looking sideways. There's the arrogance of the heat of the day, this spiritual pride. You've made us equal. And we bore the burden all day. If there's not a more convicting line in this story, I'm more valuable because I've suffered more. I deserve more because I've been here longer. I'm better because I'm natural. And then gossip. The hiddenest of all hidden sins. That sneaky little gossip. What is it in VeggieTales? Do you guys remember? It's like Gossip Grape or something like that. Is it Gossip Weed? I don't remember. That's the rumor weed. You're right. Yeah. Verse 11. and they began to grumble. What a devious, simple little line. They began to grumble, and they're looking at each other, and they're like, hang on a second. The people that went first got 120, and now I'm at 120. That does not seem fair. Did you get 120? Did you get 120? It's a poison, you guys. It's recruiting allies to justify your resentment, right? Trying to find the people. I'm going to fleece out there and see if I can get a little rally of people who just don't like the things that I don't like. And then we'll change things. The sting of gossip is it seems to level the playing field, but in fact puts you at a higher status than others, doesn't it? That devious tool called gossip. Friends, we aren't grumbling because God's unfair. We grumble because we've forgotten that God is fair. And none of us would be allowed at the gate, let alone be invited into the vineyard, if it weren't for his mercy. We're no better than those fools at the end of the day who are sitting at the bar. Nobody's asked me to work. This gets to the, I think for me, the heart of the text, the question under the question. It's where the parable really, for me, stopped being this theoretical, like, isn't the grace of Jesus just so sweet? Because of Jesus' generosity, his grace flattens the ladder. Flattens the ladder for his disciples when they want to be propped up. Flattens the ladder for the rich when they're trying to be justified. Flattens the ladder for those who have been hard at work investing in this kingdom. The ground at the cross is flat. There's room for all of us. The cross doesn't reward time served with status. And the question Jesus is asking isn't about what is fair. The question he's asking is what he gave us enough. Read Psalm 103 with me. He says, the word says, starting at verse 10, he does not treat us as our sins deserve, or repay us according to our iniquities. For as high as the heavens are above the earth, so great is his love for those who fear him. As far as the east is from the west. As far as the east is from the west, that's how far he's removed our transgressions from us. Is Jesus enough? Is Jesus enough? This is what I've realized, you guys. The landowner isn't just giving away a day's wage. The price he paid was himself. Jesus was the wage. I can hear him asking, since what I've given you is me, is that not enough for you? I've given you everything. For the wages of sin is death, but the free gift of God is eternal life in Jesus Christ. Friends, he has paid the wage. He's paid the price for you. He's the wage. He was always the price. And I've been asking for more. And I've been comparing myself to what others are getting paid. Was he not enough for me? Gosh, this reframes the whole story. It's about servanthood and leadership and generosity and faithfulness and his grace and how it showers over us in places we just don't deserve. Is that not enough? This is not a transaction. Out of his love and mercy, he wanted to give you the whole thing. He wants to invite you in because he's generous and good. The treasure he's offering is him. Come in. It's not about status. It's not leverage. It's not rank. Jesus tells us the greatest in the kingdom are those who stop asking for more and more and more and begin to look for ways to invite others into the vineyard. Because guess what, guys? He's offering a full day's wage, no matter what time of day you get here. Come on. There's enough for everybody. Ask yourself that. I'm going to invite our worship team up here. Has Jesus been enough for you? Have you found in your life that there's voids that you're just still hungry for more? You're constantly comparing yourself to what others have, their gifts, their toys. You go, why don't I have that? Friends, Jesus is here right now telling you, I've given you everything if you just come to me. I've paid the whole price for you if you just let go of the other things. You have all of it available now. Let go of your desire and hunger for the things of this world and the constant bookkeeping and the comparison and the metrics. I've offered the full deal for anyone who'll take it. I think about the story of the king who's throwing this great feast. And he's inviting everybody to come. And nobody RSVPs. And the king's looking around and he's like, where are the people at the table? I've got this great banquet. Go out in the street and just find anybody. Because this feast is for you. Friends, we are just that anybody. We didn't get invited first. For some of us, we've been the last. But the pay is the same. The wage was him and the work he did at the cross. So why don't we stand? We'll go into this response song. And I want us to think about the work of Christ at the cross for you and the things that your flesh is craving for. And maybe this is your chance to open your life to him once again. Say, Christ, you are enough for me.